Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locking in for episode 52 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there. You can leave a review like if you're feeling like it also. Find us on audioboom.com too. I'm on every day of the week now, Monday through Friday, so last episode of the week today. Today's episode was supposed to be over-unders for win totals throughout the league. I know that. I know I plugged it all week. I'm not going to end up doing that today. That's my fault. I shouldn't have teased. I was going to do it with Josh Lloyd of Locked On Fantasy Basketball. We were all ready to record. We were all good to go. And then Cameron Payne's foot struck. For those who don't know, the Thunder announced Thursday that Cameron Payne, who got hurt in Thursday night's blue and white scrimmage, they gave us the injury update. He suffered an acute fracture to his fifth metatarsal in his right foot. That's the same foot he had the Jones fracture on. A Jones fracture is an injury to the fifth metatarsal. The Thunder did not say whether those two injuries were related or whether they weren't, but they are to the same bone. We don't know if it's to the same spot in the same bone, but we do know the same bone and the same foot. Because of that, we're doing a Cameron Payne podcast today instead of the over-unders. I'm still going to be recording with Josh for an over-under podcast. We're just delaying it until next week, sometime next week, and I'm going to end up doing that. Since it's a Friday podcast, I'm off for the weekend. I'm going to be talking with John Hamm. Of the franchise very shortly, friend of the show, one of my favorite guests, very soon. First, though, before the Payne injury was announced, Zach Harper of CBS Sports went on Locked On NBA with David Locke. If you know this podcast, I'm sure you know that one. And the two got to talking about the best benches in the league. Zach, in a convo about Houston, the Thunder, ranked both of those teams up there in the top half of benches in the league. Here's part of Zach's and David's conversation.
I thought were interesting in your listings. One was the Oklahoma City-Houston aspect of things. They both have superstars, and you both had their benches above average, which if Houston got rid of Corey Brewer, I might agree, because I actually think Houston's going to be really good this year. Other than Corey Brewer, every single one of their guys uses possessions above the league average, and I'm a huge believer in that. And then Oklahoma City is interesting. It's almost like we need to take a second, just pull back and reevaluate Oklahoma City just from top to bottom. But both those benches above league average, is that a bigger statement about how bad some benches are, or are both those actually pretty good?
I think a little bit of both. I think that the individual components for Houston, like for me, Eric Gordon puts a big push into making that team. Like if you can have a guy like Eric Gordon coming off your bench, I think that's just a huge boost to your bench because you need those. I'm as a lover of gunners. Like I'm very much a believer in having that offensive weapon off the bench and someone who shoots like Gordon does, especially with the way he's going to play in Mike D'Antoni's system as long as he's healthy. I'm very into that idea. They need to re-sign Monte Ellis, whether they seem to believe it or not. Like I think that would definitely help the bench. Nene, I don't really know what to do with Nene. I feel like whenever I buy in, he falls apart. Whenever I think he's going to fall apart, he seems to do well. So I'm done guessing on Nene. But I think as a whole, as a unit, the bench will be good together. And I kind of feel the same way, or the opposite, but still positive about OKC. I'm not totally sure how their bench is going to work together, but I like those components individually. Like I think Cameron Payne going into his second year, as long as his foot ankle is okay. I think he'll be a really nice backup point guard. I don't think Singler's as bad as he was last year. I like Abrines coming from Spain. Collison always does well. Enes Kanter is kind of that really nice backup big man in terms of, like, he'll get you points, he'll get you rebounds. You don't want to throw him out there too long defensively, but you need those guys who can kind of grab a focus and have a skill that they can exploit. So I think individually they're good. If you stagger those throwout the lineup and you're throwing, you know, Ersan Ilyasova in with a couple of these guys, and you're throwing Victor Oladipo in with the second unit a little bit, and Andre Roberson defensively, like, I think you can get by with what they have.
I think the Thunder have a pretty good bench too. We don't know the timetable on Payne, but we can assume, I think he's, you know, we can assume he's at least missing some of the preseason in an absolute best case scenario. So now I'm going to welcome in John Hamm of the franchise. And John, I'm just going to ask you right away, like, how badly does the Payne injury actually hurt the Thunder bench if he's going to miss games?
Well, if we're looking at a 6 to 8 week timeline, it's probably not that impactful. I mean, we're talking about the possibility of missing between, what, 8 to 20 games. Now, obviously, you know, the deeper you get into the season, that becomes a little more impactful. But if we're, you know, if all goes well and we're looking at a 6 week recovery, which seems to be kind of the standard for this type of an injury, you know, maybe it won't be that significant.
Now, how are you, by the way? How you doing? I didn't say what's up. How you doing?
I just figured you didn't care. I didn't say anything. So, no, I'm great. How are you, Fred?
I'm good. I'm apparently okay. Very into this. I'm forgetting about your feelings and your emotions and how you could potentially be doing it all. So,
well, this is what I call life. So that's fine.
Cameron Payne hit me hard. You can't spell pain without pain.
This is right.
It hit me real hard. There are so many things we go with. Pain returns, and campaigns. Campaign is pained.
Oh,
so many things to go with. Oh, so I don't even know if that's a pun as much as it's just repeating the same word over and over again.
Yeah, but it's joyful is what it is.
it's about as joyful as you could make an injury. Which is really, really joyful. I don't think it's joyful, and I don't think it's joyful for the Thunder, and I don't think it's joyful for Cameron Payne. So the Thunder initially said that this injury, when he suffered it on Tuesday night, that was at the Blue and White scrimmage, which is this open scrimmage the Thunder hold annually, and they did it at John Marshall Mid High School this year, did in front of about 2,000 fans there. Cameron Payne in the second quarter hurt his ankle, hurt his foot. We now know. Fractured the fifth metatarsal, which is the outside bone. So, like, you know how you got, like, your pinky toe? And then below that, below each of your toes, there's, like, a long bone in your foot. Those are your metatarsals. And the one furthest on the outside, the one that leads to the pinky toe, that is your fifth metatarsal. That's what the acute fracture is. Now, the acute fracture is not it's not like you broke it in half. It's a small fracture if it's an acute fracture. And like John said, the usual timetable is 6 to 8 weeks. I don't like to speculate on timetables when we don't know, because everybody is different. You know what I mean? And everybody, and on top of that, this is possibly, I don't know. We don't know, but it seems intuitive that we could, that there's, you know, it, at the very least, he had a similar injury to this, that he had operated on over the summer. So there's something that we should, you know, there's a possibility it could be approached with a little bit more caution coming back. But I wonder, like, how this does. Now, Billy Donovan said today that he doesn't think that this will affect Payne's development. But last year, he was kind of in and out of the rotation. And maybe the long term, it really doesn't make a difference. I don't dispute Billy Donovan on that. But in terms of how this affects this team, I think this is a pretty big deal, because Cameron Payne losing preseason, losing training camp when he had an ability, he has to establish some consistency in his game. I think that's a big deal for him.
Yeah, it, possibly so. And one thing that you know, you mentioned earlier, according to Royce Young, the team is saying that these injuries are not related, because the Jones fracture was a stress injury. This was an impact injury. In other words, I think they're clarifying that, you know, this is not the Kevin Durant situation where that Jones fracture kept becoming a problem. Now, they called it unrelated, but there is a history of, you know, pro athletes that have Jones fractures that wind up with another injury somewhere along that leg, somewhere along the way. So it may not be directly related, but they could be related, if that makes any sense whatsoever. So, but as far as how it impacts the Thunder, I mean, I understand what you're saying about, you know, obviously losing the preseason, the conditioning. You know, you think back to Mitch McGarry last season, who suffered a concussion in preseason, had to sit out for a while, and just basically fell behind. I guess I'm looking at it, too, from the standpoint of one of the concerns that I had about the Thunder bench was what kind of defense they were going to have. And, you know, maybe I'm being a little optimistic here, but maybe getting Ronnie Price out there to start off will help in that regard. Obviously, he's not going to bring the offensive impact that they were anticipating from Payne, but I think he's going to at least, you know, bring some stout defense on the defensive end, which maybe that second unit might need to start the season.
Ronnie Price guards the ball really well. Like, that's the thing he's really good at. You're right. He's the best point guard defender on this team. You can make that argument, I think. So if Ronnie Price if Payne was the backup and Ronnie Price was a third point guard, which means we probably weren't going to see many, if any, minutes out of him on a regular basis. If that's what it was going to be, and now we're going to see him for if Westbrook plays 36, maybe we see him for 12 minutes. That's 12 more minutes of really good point guard defense, I'm with you. That helps. I think the big thing with Payne is that, I mean, there are two big things with Payne right now, which is number one, and they're interrelated, which is assuming that this is just a short-term injury and he's back at, you know, some point in, you know, this season and he's back and he's healthy and the Thunder and he doesn't have to worry about this anymore. The two things that I would worry about both come in just having a tertiary facilitator, because this team has Westbrook and has Oladipo, who are both good. I mean, Westbrook, obviously phenomenal as a primary ball handler. And Oladipo, I think, is a good option as a secondary creator. This team doesn't really have a third guy. Payne, who was inconsistent last year, was going to have to be the third guy. Now he's not there. Like, Ronnie Price is not – well, I think he's a wonderful defensive point guard. He doesn't have a history of running good second units, or even when he was with the Lakers and starting for a bit, like – efficient first units. He doesn't have that history. He's a defensive guy, and I wonder how they're going to run these second units when Russell Westbrook is off the floor, even for 12 minutes a game. Like, does Victor Oladipo now have to be out on the floor whenever Ronnie Price is out there?
Yeah, could be. I mean, staggering has been the big phrase for a while in Oklahoma City in regards to Durant and Westbrook, and so now we could be looking at that again. With Victor Oladipo. So it makes a lot of sense to do that at least to start the season, because that is one problem with this team is, there's really no other really good ball handler outside of Westbrook and Oladipo. I do admit that's a problem. I'm looking at it from the short term. You know, it might kind of suck for 8 to 16, maybe 20 games, hopefully not that long. But, you know, in the long term, hopefully, knock on wood, you know, I'm hoping he's going to come back and be fine and shape that up.
Yeah, if I'm the Thunder, assuming he comes back healthy, because you always want that for somebody, no matter whether you're a fan or whether you work for a team or whether, you know, you're somebody like us and just kind of impartial people on the side. Like, you never want somebody hurt. Like, you never want to see that. You never want to see someone just, you know, you never want to see something like this. I feel really bad for Cameron Payne. Like, this is an unfortunate way for him to get back. His first scrimmage back in front of fans, he gets injured again. And that's just really unfortunate for a kid who seems like a really good kid. I wonder, though. And if I'm the Thunder, what I'm really curious about with all of this, about the million things that are running through my mind is, so I said before, he was inconsistent last year, which is totally excusable. Not only was he a rookie, but he was a rookie who was injured. So, I mean, he had the injury leading up to what led to that operation that he had in July on the Jones fracture. He was in a walking boot in between games a lot of the time, and he had that injury. So he was injured and he was a rookie. And if there are any excuses for being inconsistent, the two best ones are being injured and being a rookie. And if you have both of them, it's fine. I don't care where you're drafted. That's a totally valid reason to be inconsistent as a rookie. And I was really curious to see how he was going to be where the Thunder, I mean, they weren't handing the keys to Cameron Payne, but they were giving him a legitimate role. Like, he still will have to be a consistent rotation player in this team for them to maintain decent offense throughout the season. Because, like I said, there just isn't really that third creator, third ball handler on the team if Payne's not there. And I I thought that somebody for him, it was important for someone in his position, a second-year guy, still young, put on some more weight, was coming off surgery, had to learn his body in both of those senses. I thought that it was important for him to be able to establish that consistency once we got to the regular season, to go through training camp, to go through preseason, to learn some more stuff about himself, to learn some more stuff about his body, to recover quickly. And this just delays that. So now all of a sudden, if he's coming back, even if it comes quickly, even if it's 6 weeks, and you know, whenever it is, I don't even want to speculate on when it could be because I don't know. But whenever he comes back, you know, now all of a sudden that's pushed back. And that doesn't delay his long-term development. It doesn't make him a worse player in the long term. But it does affect the Thunder today. And this is a team that's in a position where if they lose three more games, maybe they find themselves outside of the playoff picture. That's possible. I mean, that could be a difference. And something like that could you know, lose him a game here and there. And that's really... really what the issue is to me, like just getting pain from a basketball perspective, just getting pain established is something that I'm sure they wish they could have been able to do. And now it's something that they're going to have to do differently.
Yeah. And, you know, has anyone brought up the possibility that 5 to 10 pounds of muscle that he added contributed to this?
That's pretty speculative.
Look, I'm going to write a story about it. I don't care if it's true or not. I think there's something there.
I don't care if it's true or not is a good motto to describe 2016.
I'm going to run with it.
Yeah,
I am.
That's a run away. I'm not going to run with it.
No,
I am not going to run with that. I mean, like I guess that's why. I mean, the thing is, I try to stay away from guessing on this stuff. Like, I'm pretty confident in my basketball knowledge. I'm pretty confident in my journalistic knowledge. What I'm not confident in is my medical knowledge. And I try to stay away from any sort of speculating, which is why, like, I've done my research, and I know that, like, the average timetable for an injury like this is 6 to 8 weeks. That's what everybody has told me. But I make it very clear that, like, I don't know if that's what it is. I realize that every person is different. And I am... amazingly, on top of everything that I am not a doctor. I didn't have time to go to med school because of all like the late night Kings games that I was staying up to watch
right.
for no reason.
Yeah.
So I that's what would happen. I would go to med school and they would ask me if I like prepped or I'd become a doctor. They asked me if I prepped for surgery. I'd be like, nope, couldn't. Had to watch the Kings to see if like see if like Isaiah Cousins is going to make it on as the third point guard, or if he's going to be in the D League.
the important stuff, exactly. So
exactly.
Yeah, same thing. I mean, the extent of my medical knowledge is what I can Google, and you know, quite often when I start Googling, you know, medical things, it comes back with cancer. So I stopped doing it after a while. But and clearly, I think Payne is going to see a specialist probably within the next week or so, and we'll know a lot more. You know, after that point, they could choose to do a completely, you know, different recovery with him, considering the Jones fracture. And you're absolutely right. It could actually sideline him for longer, which if it is for longer, you know, that's when I think it gets interesting about what the team might have to do, you know, to compensate for that.
Yeah. I mean, this roster is interesting because there are 16 guys whose contracts are going to be guaranteed on opening night. And obviously one of those guys has to go. Something that Bobby Marks at The Vertical tweeted today, which is not something that I knew, which is that games 6 through 15, Mitch McGarry is on the suspended list. So he doesn't count towards the Thunder's roster. So they could actually sign somebody else in those games. But over the first 5 games, he's not on the suspended list. That was from so they would have to get down to 15 at the start of the season. But if McGarry were one of those 15 that stayed, they could bring in someone for games 6 through 15. I don't know how that would go. I don't know if that's a viable strategy, and I was unfamiliar with that rule until Bobby was talking about it earlier today. But that was an interesting little tidbit that I learned there. I wonder though, like, if the pain injury, and I guess without knowing the severity of it, you can't really have an opinion on this. And the Thunder don't know the severity either. The Thunder say that Payne's going to see his physician, and then he's going to see some specialists, and then they're going to figure out whatever the next steps are from there. Because I don't think they really, I'm sure they have a better idea of the timetable than we do, and obviously their doctors do. But I don't think they know for certain right now exactly what the deal is with Payne until he, you know, gets more opinions from whoever else he's going to. And so I wonder though, like what how this affects the way the Thunder go with, you know, 16. Like, do you try to get another point guard who you can plug in? Because I know they like Ronnie Price. And I know obviously they like Ronnie Price. They gave him two guaranteed years in a market that I'm guessing did not get, like, I'm guessing that the market did not dictate that you absolutely had to give Ronnie Price 2 years of more than minimum salary in order to get him. So if you do that, you like Ronnie Price. So you know they like Ronnie Price. But the question is, do they like Ronnie Price as a backup point guard? You know they like him as a third. The question is, do they like him as a backup? Because those are very different roles. Third point guard, you want pestering guys in practice. You can, you know, he's on either end of the spectrum. Usually, your third point guard, it's either like your Royale Ivy or your Ronnie Price, who's like an older veteran who's going to help with young guys, or it's like a really young guy who they're bringing in, who's almost like a step above a D-leaguer, and he's your, you know, 12th through 15th guy, and he's coming in and he's going to pester in his own ways because he's young and trying to scrap his way into the league. It's pretty rare to find your third point guard who's like 28 and has been in the league for a little while and is, you know, a guy who doesn't have that mentality. Like, if he is, he's a guy who's like a grinder, you know? Mm-hmm. And I wonder if Ronnie Price is great in that third point guard role. I wonder if they feel that same way about him in the backup point guard role. And I wonder how that then dictates how they go about setting up their roster for the upcoming season, because they're in a position where they're already going to have to make at least one move and just to get down to 15. And if, you know, once they get back the timetable on Payne, you know, maybe something else, maybe it makes them want to at least search for something else. And I'm sure if you're a GM, you're doing your job by just putting out feelers. And I just wonder what that process is.
Yeah, because, you know, when Bobby Marks tweeted that out, I wasn't aware of this either. So apparently the 10 game suspension, they take that burden off the team. You know, you should not have to suffer because of our protocol and the guy forgot to show up for a certain drug test, apparently. So, yeah, I found that interesting. And my thought was, could this possibly be a reprieve for McGarry? Because we've all assumed that he's out the door, you know, that he's going to be the one to go to trim up the roster. But now there's kind of that slightly hidden benefit that if you can get through the first five games, then he goes on the suspended list. Well, then you could sign someone, like you said, in the interim for a few games, depending on what Payne's timetable looks like. Anyway, that crossed my mind. I don't know how much validity there is to that. And you mentioned 16 guys that are with guaranteed deals. There's a 17th that's got a partial guarantee, and that's Samaje Christen, their second-round pick from a couple of years ago, who just happens to play point guard. But now you're talking about making yet an additional move somewhere on the roster to open up a spot to bring him on. And then whenever Payne comes back, assuming, you know, he does come back within that smaller time frame, do you really need four point guards at that time? It's interesting to kind of look at all the different scenarios there. And then there's the other option of going on and signing a veteran point guard, because there are two or three on the market that at least have NBA experience, but they're frankly not very good at this point.
Right. I mean, if they were going to bring somebody in, I think it would be Christen, but you'd have to make moves to make that happen. I mean, look, something I wrote about today is that there's something called a hardship that you can apply for with the league. If you have four guys on your roster who have missed at least three consecutive games, then you can apply for a league for a hardship and you get a 16th man on your roster. And that's the way you can bring in a guy. But obviously Payne is only one of those guys. So the Thunder would need to suffer, you know, three other flies would need to drop for three games in order for them to, you know, bring in another point guard without actually making any other move. And even so, they would still have to make a move if that guy was going to be a point guard who they brought in, because they have 16 guys right now.
Right.
So there's going to be some sort of move. And that would have to be three games before they could actually apply for that hardship anyway. So that's, you know, a shot in the dark. It's something I wrote about because I just wanted to get the information out there because I saw somebody suggest it on Twitter and I was like, yeah. But well, I wonder just from, because I think roster building is really interesting in this sense, and that like people talk about how like the off season is the time where you roster build, but like this is one of those subtle roster building moments, and like not doing something is still a roster building move. Like not making a move is a move too, and I wonder like what the move is. Is the move here not making a move? And obviously we don't, there's no answer without a timetable for Payne. But is the move here not making a move, or is the move here trying to move pieces around and seeing what you can do to maybe even out the numbers on your roster a little bit more? I mean, it's not inherently bad to have a lot of bigs and be short on wings and maybe move forward with point guards for a couple of point guards for a little bit. But I'd imagine like teams like having three point guards. There's a reason pretty much every team has three point guards. So if it's for a little while, I'm curious to see how this all plays out from a roster building perspective.
Yeah, and if you look around the league, there's still a few teams that have a lot of cap room available. Brooklyn's got over 15 available. The Denver's got over 14. Indiana's got a couple of million. Philadelphia, as always, is sitting with about 23 million in space. Utah, Phoenix have got a bunch. So there are places where, they could, if they need to deposit somebody, for example, trade Mitch McGarry and cash to cover his contract and take back something just to get his salary off the books. I think that they're going to have some opportunity to do that if they want. They could, potentially package, let's say, Ilyasova and McGarry together and, try to do a 2-for-1 or string together two or three players and do a 3-for-1 or a 3-for-2, to try to even this out. So, I agree with you. These are the challenges that come up in training camp. You think about Milwaukee, all right, we got our team set. We're ready for training camp. And then Chris Middleton's hamstring comes off. So, how do you compensate for that? You get Michael Beasley. That's not the greatest scenario.
Yeah. Oh, that's so disappointing with Chris
Middleton. So, it's terrible.
I love his game.
I really do too.
He's the most underrated player in the league, maybe. There's an argument for Chris Middleton as the most underrated player in the league.
I've liked him for a long time, and I was talking to someone the other day that when Milwaukee came to Oklahoma City last season, I think he was the best player on the floor that night. I think he dropped 36 points on the Thunder and hit like 6 of 9 from three and just phenomenal both ends of the floor. And yeah, the fact that he may miss the entire season is such a bummer, especially for that Milwaukee Bucks team that, is starting to get really interesting.
It is. Everyone talks about Giannis with that team. And I think Giannis, if you ask pretty much anyone who's the best player on the Bucks, I think, I don't know what percentage of the time, but the vast majority of the time you're going to get Giannis as the answer as the best player on the Bucks. And I agree Giannis has the most potential because he's younger than Middleton and, he's got the athleticism and the arms and there's so many things he's good at and he's like a 6'11 point guard. But right now, like at least last year, Chris Middleton was the better player.
Yeah, no doubt.
Chris Middleton was really good. Like he does everything except he's not a great rebounder on the wing. That's like his only real flaw, but his game is complete. Like he's good off the dribble. People think of him as like catch and shoot, but he's good off the dribble. He'll take you. And like, he's a great shooter. He's an awesome, versatile, like 2016 style, like modern defender where he can switch on to just a million different people. Mm-hmm. And Giannis is like that too, but I think Middleton is a little more advanced of a defender. I don't know. I don't know how we got into Chris Middleton talk right now. He's good. Just Chris Middleton is one of my favorites.
Yeah, depressing preseason injuries as they tend to happen. So
yeah, you know what I learned today? Randy Renner showed me this stat. Are you a baseball fan?
At a high level, I was a huge baseball fan, like in the '80s and early '90s, but I kind of dropped out.
You're dating yourself with that one.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Greg Maddux, Ryan Sandberg, Mark Grace. Yeah.
Well, what I learned today from Randy Renner is that the two Chris Davises, Chris Davis of the Athletics and Chris Davis of the Baltimore Orioles, over the last 365 days have the exact same amount of home runs, the exact same amount of doubles, and the exact same amount of stolen bases.
Well, that's just weird.
That is amazing. It's amazing. It is one of the most amazing things That's one of the most amazing things that it's a great useless. It's one of my favorite useless stats I think I've ever seen. That is,
yeah.
That is unbelievable. Except
one, a lot of knowledge out of that one.
Yeah. One Chris Davis is with a K and one's with a C. But other than that, they might be the same person.
They're basically identical.
They are identical. I think we've devolved. anything to plug before we go? We've unraveled.
Nothing at this point. So, franchise work's going to be ramping up. I think we're trying to get together to do a preview show probably in the next week. We may be getting in contact with you, as a matter of fact, and just start talking about the NBA season, what to expect, you know, locally and around the NBA, and start getting geared up for that. I'm excited.
Well, please do get in contact with me. I owe you one for coming on. So last second, and listen to John's show. John and Jerry Ramsey are the hosts of the basketball show on the franchise. And John's too modest to say it, but I will say it. It's a really good show. I've joked to John before that he's like one of the least talk radio-y people in talk radio. Like, I feel like if there is a polar opposite of like Mike Francesa's hot takes, like John Hamm's your guy.
I try to keep it real. I think that's what the kids say these days, right? I try to keep it real.
I don't know, man. You were watching baseball in the 80s. I was.
Yes, I was.
I was alive for 3 months of the 80s, and that was it. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's what my wife asked me earlier about all these people, these various reporters. So are they your age? No, they're all about 10 years younger. Yeah, I'm the gray beard.
All right. Well, before John gets too sad, let's wrap this up. Remember, I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday. I'm still doing that Over Under podcast, like I said before. Just delayed it. Don't worry. It's going to be next week now, and that's with Josh Lloyd of Locked On Fantasy Basketball. It's going to be fun. I'm excited to do it. But you know, the pain news was big news, and I think we had to get to that. And I'm glad that we were able to dedicate a whole podcast to Cameron Payne, because I think this is a big deal, no matter what the timetable on the actual injury is. You can head out to iTunes to subscribe to Locked On Thunder, and you'll get the Over Under podcast. You'll get every other podcast as long as you subscribe, and you can find us on audioboom.com too. If you have questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. And if you want to advertise with us or anything like that, you can email lockedonthunder@gmail.com as well. Or you can find me on Twitter @FredKatz, FREDKATZ. And you can send me inquiries about advertising, or you can ask me questions about the Thunder, or you can just send me your most hateful tweets if you're a Twitter egg, if you'd like to. You can log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs, including, everything on pain and everything else. And you can check out Thunder Road to follow team coverage. Thunder Road's my blog there. It's under the sports tab on the website, and you can see what's next for the Thunder there. That's going to do it for today. Off for the weekend, back Monday for more Thunder and NBA talk. Until next time, Locked On Thunder is locking out.
The High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and oldnavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10. Select styles only.